It's the My Michelle Live podcast.
My Michelle Live, entertainment review. Roll out the red carpet. Here's Michelle.
Just makes me feel kind of important, and everyone should feel important once in a while. It's a My Michelle Live podcast. We talk about so many issues each day. It's a different chapter, a different page in the magazine, but always getting to what we call the God story. If there's a God, what's he doing on all this? What does he expect of us? And how can we use what we're doing, even our entertainment, to have a little closer connection and a little more hope? That is what it's all about. And today, I'm doing it with, he's more than just a guest. He's my co-host today, and we like to call him Plugged In Paul.
I'm Paul Acey.
That's right. Plugged In Paul Acey from Plugged In Movies, and oh my goodness, so much more. You can go to PluggedIn.com for excellent reviews that aren't just, hey, I liked it and here's why, but really giving you empowerment to say, this is what the movie's about. These are some of the spiritual issues, the language issues, drug issues, things that families, you might just say, yeah, that's not for me. And then you can decide what's right for you. Paul, hey, it's good to connect with you.
It's always good to talk with you, Michelle. I tell you, I want your bumper music. I really want your lead-in music to go into a meeting with. You know, I think it would make me feel confident and important, and I don't know. I might even wear a cape if I did that.
Wear a cape. Bring your own red carpet, because the world is not necessarily going to roll one out for you. Bring your own red carpet. Go into a meeting. The music's there. I'm here. Thank you. Not that I'm self-important, but everybody's got to have their day in the sun a little bit. So, taking on some movies, maybe even some TV, and just this week, I saw the play production of Jesus Christ Superstar that is touring the nation. And if you don't mind, can we start there?
Sure, absolutely.
Have you ever seen the movie Jesus Christ Superstar or any of the productions?
I have, indeed. I have seen the movie. I have not seen any of the play productions.
Okay, so this play production. Last week we interviewed James T. Justice, who plays Judas, and my goodness, talented, astoundingly talented, great music. It's a rock opera, so there is no spoken lines delivered. And I want to say, yes, spectacular production, but it is so anticlimactic when you have the most amazing story, the most phenomenal thing that could have ever happened in all of human history, and you have this life of Jesus, and then he's dead, and you're like, where's the rest? Where's the rest? Yep. You're not going to go to Jesus Christ Superstar for theology, that's for sure. And they put, it's as though it is, this production, it feels very dystopian, you know, the dress and everything and the set. But Paul, well, you'll not be able to pull out a lot of spiritual inspiration. It's kind of like it's kind of like Andrew Lloyd Webber was groping in the dark and trying to figure out who this Jesus was from all these different points of view. But what I wanted to talk about, why I wanted to talk about with you, is because we joke. Everybody now jokes about Paul Acey, dude can spiritualize burnt toast, right? You can take something and say, wait, we can pull something out of it. God uses whatever God wants to use. And I'm telling you, after that production, a lot of people were talking about, who is Jesus? And I think anytime you put the name of Jesus out there, it gets you thinking. And I'd like your thoughts.
Yeah, it's a very interesting, it's a very interesting production, whether you see it on stage, whether you see it in the movies. It definitely comes at Jesus from an angle that I think a lot of probably people in the secular culture do, where they think of him, they know he was influential, they know he changed the world, but was he really the Son of God? They're not so sure. And so this sort of presents Jesus as that very influential person that everybody, especially Judas in the movie and in the play, is really trying to figure out who he is, what he is doing there, why he's doing what he's doing. And from that perspective, it is both really disappointing and kind of interesting. The thing that I really appreciate about Jesus Christ Superstar is that it does bring home kind of the humanity of Jesus by very definition, right? So many of the stories of Jesus that we see within the Christian sphere, they tend to sanctify Jesus a little bit. They tend to dehumanize him and make him really, you know, sometimes you see that he never gets dirty. He always has great hair, all this kind of stuff. This is a very human Jesus that we see in Jesus Christ Superstar. And because of that, because it sort of presents him that way, you can see, I think, really effectively the motivations that some of the people around Jesus had. Judas comes across not as sort of the ultimate villain in Christianity, but you see that he had questions. You see that he had concerns. You see kind of how he got to the point where he would betray, you know, the person that he's been following for so long. I've always liked how Caiaphas and the other Pharisees were portrayed in here, because you can see the political angles a little bit more clearly in some ways. So it brings in a level of very human complexity to the stories that sometimes we miss.
Yeah, we now, don't realize sometimes that Jesus is God, and that's why he was put to death, because he made that claim. But we also have to realize that he was all man as well. And in that, I have a savior who can relate to my hopes, aspirations, disappointments, and heartbreak. So it does bring that in, and it is a spectacular production. So I will give it that. But how do you stop that story there and not have like, okay, intermission, and we come back, we're going to see a risen Jesus. You know, you're kind of like,
right,
where's the rest of this?
Exactly. It's a little like, I don't know, it's just so strange. It's like stopping Lord of the Rings just as Frodo and Sam are at the foot of Mount Doom, right?
Come on. Exactly. Geek out with me for a moment. But here's something that I'm wondering if we can expect. You know, you go to see something about Jesus, you expect a passion play. You're not going to get that from Jesus Christ Superstar as it comes to a city near you. It was in Portland. It was just in Seattle. It'll be touring the nation. What about the new James Bond film? Now, is that something we're going to go in and say, oh, yeah, we know exactly what's going on here?
That was quite a switch. And
you
there
like
are
that?
Some comparisons.
Yeah.
From Jesus to James Bond. Yeah, you know, it is a really interesting movie. So, James Bond, I just to let you and everybody listening to you know, I kind of grew up with James Bond, oddly enough. My grandma sort of forced me to watch James Bond movies when I was a little tiny. So I have a good familiarity with the character. I've seen all the movies. And from a plugged-in point of view, we all know that James Bond is kind of problematic. When you talk about family viewing, this is a hero who sleeps around. He kills lots of people by definition. He drinks like a, you know, he drinks his vodka martinis as if they were orange juice. And so you do have some problematic elements that you're dealing with here. But in Daniel Craig's version of James Bond, and this is Daniel Craig's last turn as James Bond, he brings a little bit of heart to the character. And this heart has never been more apparent than in this movie. The movie essentially turns James Bond from this sort of suave, debonair, cool, callous killer into something of a family man. He has fallen in love. He fell in love in the last movie, and she comes back. We see him latching on to something besides for Queen and Country. And that brings a really interesting dimension to the movie, I think. It's for James Bond lovers, there's a lot to like in this movie. For people who are very wary of James Bond as a character, there is a lot to be wary of here. You still have lots of killing, and sometimes those deaths are not very pretty. You still have drinking. You still have women in these glamorous but somewhat revealing outfits. So there's a lot to be concerned about. But in terms of James Bond's heart, he takes a turn here that you don't often see in these movies.
Okay. I've also heard, I haven't seen the film or reviewed the film, but that we may be looking at a more woke James Bond in the future, maybe a little POC, maybe switch it up a little bit, because that's been the trend. Rather than inventing new ideas, we'll just take old ideas and we'll make them politically correct.
You know, it's interesting to see what will become of this franchise, because we all know that Daniel Craig, it is his last time as James Bond. What are they going to do with the character here? In the process of this movie, and I don't think I'm spoiling much here, but James Bond, he retires. You know, he settles down to a little place in Jamaica where he fishes and he spends some time before he's called back into quote unquote duty. But while he was away, of course, his 00 number was reassigned to somebody else. And so he meets this somebody else, and that creates a little bit of a friction. Now, there had been rumors that this somebody else, who is a female, might take over the mantle of James Bond. She might become the new 007. From my perspective, I'm not sure if I have a huge problem with that. You know, because
I don't have a problem with it, but that's on the small scale. But
right.
I do have a problem with it because I'm kind of tired of the reinventing of people. Everything has to be redone for a different skin color or sex or sexual orientation or this or that. And frankly, I've been tired for a long time of the lack of innovation in Hollywood. We just have people living off the backs of the talented and we'll just do the same thing. We'll just switch up the characters.
You know, and it's interesting that the conversation comes up within the context of James Bond, because you could say, and I think you could make a pretty compelling argument that, man, did the character outlive his usefulness 20 years ago? You know, James Bond was created in 1964 or 62 during the heart of the Cold War. He exemplifies a lot of attitudes that are, you know, when you look at those early
misogyny,
James
Bond, can we just say the word?
Goodness, it is. He does some horrible, horrible things. But we sort of give him a pass because he's James Bond, right? For the last several movies, you sometimes hear these jokes about whether James Bond is a dinosaur, and we always ask the same questions. It's a really complicated question, honestly, when it comes to this franchise. Because
I'll give you an example. I'm a Doctor Who fan. I've been watching Doctor Who. I mean, it's been on all of my life, essentially, in one form or another. And so I've watched Doctor Who in the last iteration. If you don't understand or know Doctor Who, it's probably the longest running science fiction episodic or television show ever. And it's from BBC. And it's a story of a Time Lord from another planet. They have extraordinarily long lives and they can regenerate if they die under the right circumstances. So he has had regenerations since, you know, for the last 50 some years of new characters. The last iteration was a woman, because that's what you do now, right? But yet, I found her to be a very good doctor. I thought it was kind of fun and a little bit different. So it's not that I'm opposed to it. It's just that when someone does it, it's overdone.
Right. And I think that that's really the key. Do they do it well? Do they bring something new to the story? There is a new show called The Wonder Years on, which people might remember from back in the day, starring Fred Savage. This time, The Wonder Years, it takes place in Montgomery, Alabama. It features a Black family instead of a white family. And for me, the show has taken on new layers. I really like what they've done because it's become a different show. It needed to become a different show with still that sort of innocent quality that the original had. But sometimes, to your point, sometimes they make these changes just to make the changes and they don't bring anything to the party. And that's when I think not only do we have a problem with it, but viewers can see through that, you know, fans can see through that and they see that something's been lost just for the sake of adding something that is new, but not very well thought out.
Yeah. So, we'll judge on a case-by-case basis, but you can always go to Plugged In to find out if there's more changes to something. And this often happens. You love the original and you think, okay, I'll watch a remake. And then you find that some of the issues that are in there are like, ooh, whoops. Okay. Adam's Family. We keep seeing more iterations of Adam's Family, and I know we've talked about this briefly last week, but because we're coming on the haunting season, Adam's Family is at the forefront of a lot of folks' minds, and I kind of like your take on it. While I understand it does have some strong family appreciative elements, there are some things that, you know, well, are kind of macabre, but you'd expect it, right?
As is the nature with the Addams Family, right? You just can't escape it. It's part of what they are. It's interesting because, and I do think entertainment is sort of going in this direction as we talk about how people are doing different things with these same old, somewhat tired franchises. You could make the argument that maybe the Addams Family is a little tired itself. It is... I think that we have seen it in television shows back from the 1960s. We've seen movies, live action. We've seen these cartoon versions. And it does feel like, for me, the macabre humor may be wearing a little bit thin. Granted, this is meant for kids. This is very much a kids' movie. Today, when you look at a lot of the animated features that we see, Luca or Raya and the Last Dragon or any of these things that we've seen, they have some really big emotional oomph that parents can appreciate, that adults can appreciate. This one is more for kids. It has some potty humor. It has quite a bit of potty humor. It has that macabre sense of humor, as you say, but I don't think it's really to the level that it would cause anybody nightmares or anything, but I think that it's something that parents should be aware of. It is just, if you can get past the toilet humor, this is just fine. You know, it's nothing special. It's nothing creative. It's nothing that I find myself really thinking, wow, that surprised me. It's just
It's just fine. Something that I wanted to get to is a movie. It's kind of a music documentary, and it's the Jesus Music. For those of us who grew up in the church, popular music, Christian, contemporary Christian music, even Christian rock, were a part of our growing up. It was a part of our faith. I saw Stryper back in the day, you know. When I first saw Michael W. Smith hit the stage, I was like, whoa, because music and faith was often one-dimensional. You know, you sang your hymns, and those are powerful and wonderful. You sing church songs. But then you see this Michael W. Smith everywhere, all over the stage, celebrating, excited about his faith, and you're going, that's me! That's me! And those are folks from back in the day. I'm going to play a trailer from the Jesus Music movie, but I'd like to get your thoughts on it first. Set the stage.
You bet. Jesus Music, I think you set it up really, really nicely. The Jesus Music essentially just tracks Christian music, especially Christian contemporary music, through 50 years. And like you, I sort of grew up with a lot of Christian music. I really resonated with a lot of the people who we see here. You have Michael W. Smith, who takes a central role in this. Amy Grant talks. Mm-hmm. Toby Mac is there. Yeah. It has a lot of really fascinating elements, but it does more than just track, I think, the history of Christian music, which is fascinating on its face. It talks about some pretty interesting issues, like what happens when success distracts, you know, when you start making a joyful noise to the Lord, and yet you're also concerned with all the money involved with what has become a huge industry.
A huge industry.
It talks a lot about the racial divides within the movement itself. It talks how oftentimes Christians have been the biggest critics of Christian music and the musicians.
Oh, so much. Because if I sing something, I confess this to you that as a singer-songwriter, one of my passions is to go into bars on a Wednesday night to open mic and sing music that is not church music, but has God elements in it, because these are people that I want to connect with, and they're not the people who are going to come to church. That falls under a lot of criticism from people. And when a artist does a song that is just a love song and not a Christian song, oh boy, you're going to get it. But you know, that's got to be along the lines of their conviction. It is the Jesus music is a chronicle, basically, of the last 50 years. It does leave out, which I think is interesting, some of the real pioneers of Christian music, the Resurrection Band. There are bands like the Daniel Band, Keith Green, who broke barriers in the past. And that's fascinating, too. So maybe we'll see Jesus Music Part 2. Let's take a listen and watch.
I think music is the most powerful language in the world. I've never shared this with anybody.
To see the richness of hope land upon someone's spirit via rhythm, rhyme, and melody. Sound. I don't understand it. But a lot of hymns are close your eyes singing to God. I wanted to sing with my eyes wide open, singing to each other.
This thing, Jesus music, found its way in my hometown, and it changed my life.
When it comes to music and how we can express ourselves, we don't have to do it the way it was done before.
You want to find a loving way to have these conversations.
My generation had seen all of the civil unrest. Most of us were trying to escape the pain and the misery.
Where do we go from here?
You feel like something's in the wind.
This soundtrack emerges.
They had no idea they were helping to create an entire industry.
I saw an entire industry. Oh, I think it's going to be so exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing that, Paul.
It's worth seeing, you know, and I think what you mentioned actually right before you played the trailer, Jesus Music Part 2, you do. It's hard to stuff the entire history of this huge, influential, incredibly rich genre in one documentary. Yeah. And you can definitely see that there's a lot of stories that still could be told. One of my very favorite groups, Jars of Clay, they get like truly just a split second of screen time and they're out of there. So I would love to see more. That is for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. It's the Jesus music. It was out September 30th. And so you may be able to just do a little Google search, find where you can see it. It will be available, streaming and all of that, as everything is. This is the time in our broadcast where I like to ask you for recommendations. What is something you say, you know, this weekend, it's worth a see?
Oh boy, that's a good question. You know, I let out my James Bond bonafides, I think that if you're a James Bond fan, the new Bond movie definitely has some merit to it. all the same problems, but there's a really resonant story behind it that I truly appreciated. And I think that it was a great way to send off Daniel Craig's version of Bond off into the sunset. I think the Jesus music, if you can find it, really fascinating. I think that's really cool. If you live in a big city, one movie you might want to check out, or if you're in a smaller city, check out next week, would be a movie called Mass. Mass is a movie that that will probably not get a lot of attention. It's essentially about the parents of a child who was shot to death in a mass shooting. Faces off with the parents of the killer in a church basement. It is essentially a four-person drama that is very difficult to watch, but it is incredibly moving and powerful and dramatic, and it even has some spiritual elements that are sort of woven underneath it all. So that's one that I would suggest people watch out for as well.
Okay. I think if you haven't had the opportunity to see Turner and Hooch, it's streaming on Disney. And that has been one of my favorite series, and it's worth even a binge watch. It's precious. It picks up, if you remember back in the day with Tom Hanks, Turner and Hooch, which was a police officer, a local police officer who kind of inherits this big, drooling mass of a dog who really helps him solve crimes and becomes his forever dog. He falls in love. They have family and puppies. And this Turner and Hooch picks up where that leaves off. If you were to imagine that the original Turner lived his life, had children, and then he dies, kind of under a mysterious basis. So his son is now a U.S. Marshal, and his daughter is a single mother. I think it's just charming. It's fun. It's very family friendly. It has wonderful elements. I've yet to see anything where I'm going, oh, cover your eyes. I've just really enjoyed Turner and Hooch. And now I'm finding that I'm like, is it Turner and Hooch time? So I've really enjoyed Turner and Hooch. I just think it's a precious series, hour-long series, or in the hour format. So that's my recommendation for this weekend, Paul. What's coming up in the future?
We already talked about Mass. That's definitely a big one to be watching out for. The one that probably a lot of people are really have their eyes peeled on is the new Dune movie.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
The old Dune movie, let's just say it. The old Dune movie was confusing, long, kind of boring. I mean, I'm transfixed every time I see the trailer of Dune. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it yet. And to tell you the truth, Adam is going to pirate this one away from me. He has read.
See how he is?
Yes, he's already said, I am going to be watching Dune. And so what can I do? But he has read all the books. I have only read one.
Can't
so
you be his plus one? Come on. I'll be his plus two.
I definitely will be seeing it. I just might, like, probably won't be reviewing it. So you'll definitely have to have Adam, and he will definitely geek out on this one for sure.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it's looking good. Jason Momoa is in it. There's a lot of recognizable folks, and it looks exciting.
The cast is outrageous. Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Oscar Isaac, Dave Bautista, Javier Bardem, they're all in this film. It feels like almost a who's who. So just from the cast alone, I'm curious about it.
Yeah.
It is hard to translate these big science fiction stories to either the big or small screen. You know, I was a little bit disappointed with Foundation, which is playing right now on Apple TV Plus. It felt like that is also based on this huge sprawling sci-fi story, this one by Isaac Asimov. And it felt like it took some liberties with the books that I was unhappy with, shall we say. So It can be a really difficult thing to translate these books to the screen, but we'll see how it does.
We'll see how it does. All right. Well, that gets you into the weekend with some must-sees, some maybe not-sees, and some why-don't-you-look-and-sees. So that's what we're doing, and we do it with Paul AC. You can find more out about these movies, also television shows, YouTube channels, books, video games. It's all there at Plugged In. It gives you kind of a one-stop shop and saves you some time from the endless scrolling and viewing. If you've done that, I mean, I've spent entire afternoons. What am I going to do this afternoon? I'm going to go on Netflix and watch trailers, you know, and try to remember which ones I'm going to want to see later. So it can save you some time. It can save you some time. Paul, it is always good to connect with you. You are such a blessing. I also want to recommend that you look up Paul's book. In fact, let's put a link on it on our website, Beauty and the Browns. It is the most funny, fun, touching, honest, raw look at dealing with clinical depression that you may ever find. So if you have dealt with depression or you love desperately someone who struggles with depression, oh my goodness, your life will be changed from this book. It is it's anointed. It's just so good. So you might want to pick that up, and you can find a link at mymichellelive.com. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
More entertainment at mymichellelive.com.